Tonight, we'll be talking about the importance of vitamin D. We'll be talking about eating raw, preventing diabetes, lowering your blood glucose level. And up next, we talk about the big scare with Dr. Anthony Horan on Coast to Coast AM. Each year, more than 250,000 men over the age of 50 diagnosed with prostate cancer. That's each year. Dr. Anthony Horan is a graduate of Dartmouth College and received his medical degree in the Columbia University School of Physicians and Surgeons. He served 2 years in the Air Force as a Surgeon General, one of them in Vietnam. After 10 years in private practice, Dr. Horan spent 15 years as a salaried urologist for the Veterans Administration, author of The Big Scare, The Business of Prostate Cancer. Here he is on Coast to Coast First Time Cast, Dr. Anthony Horan. Anthony, how are you, doctor?
Oh, George, very well. I like your introduction. I like your song, Stand By Me, and I like your gold.
I tell you what, I like your book, The Big Scares. As a matter of fact, they came out with a story just a few weeks ago about this blood test that we all take and saying that, one, might not be necessary, or two, it may give false readings. Can you explain that for us?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, this PSA, I want your listeners to refuse to have this PSA test drawn. It has far too many false positives. In an all-comers test in men over 50, you get 70% false positives, 30% alleged true positives, but even those true positives saying you find cancer, they're mostly clinically insignificant cancer. So you get down to about 1% of possibly clinically significant cancer. So it's just way no good as a screening test and shouldn't be used. And in fact, the 1987 paper that started the whole epidemic of screening with this blood test said, do not use it for screening. And instead, the entire world used it for screening.
Yet nearly every urologist, I'm 59 years old now, and after 40, they say you get that test, get it every year. Every urologist has always said, you got to get this PSA blood test. So they do the the exam, and then they do the PSA test.
Well, they're incorporating all the policy statements say that the test should be preceded by a conversation. No major group, this would include the Veterans Administration and the AOA, says get the blood test. They say have a conversation with your doctor. And what's that conversation going to be about? It's going to be about all the false positives.
Yeah.
And how you're going to be taken down the primrose path and told you have cancer when it's clinically insignificant and would never intercept your life. So the scenario you just gave me was of a conversation prior to a blood test.
I have been taking for years. I've been taking various prostate alternative medicine, herbal supplements, saw palmetto. Seems to be working. I mean,
they're not bad. We have an expert, actually, at the University of Michigan, who has been studying supplements, and he summarized this for us at a meeting of the Western Section of the American Urological Association as saying, eat a heart-healthy diet. And then your prostate will actually convert, and you can show this with biochemistry, from one that has a tendency to cancer to one that has less tendency to cancer. And some of that is just a low-fat diet. We've known since the 1930s that cancer feeds on fat. And all cancers seem to be grow more exuberantly in fat people. And so you should be on a low-fat, heart-healthy diet, and that will prevent some prostate cancer, yes.
Where does prostate cancer sit on the list of ailments that kill men?
Well, it's 3.6% of all deaths in men. To put this in perspective, more men die of accidents than die of prostate cancer. They have 4.6% of men die of accidents. For example, Robert Atkins of the famous Atkins diet.
Yes.
He slipped on the sidewalk, hit his head, and died of a head injury. Now, if he'd just had a radical prostatectomy, it'd look pretty foolish. We have tremendous competing mortality as we age, and only 3.6% of us die of prostate cancer. Now, some more, about, say, 20% more of men of African-American descent do die of prostate cancer, but that only takes it up to about 4.6% of deaths among African-Americans. So that the hysteria, if put into perspective of competing causes of death, this is not the thing that's going to get you. You should avoid accidents, fix your car, get new tires, refuse to fix the roof, get a roofer, you know, that kind of thing.
The name of the book, accidents. The Big Scare. What does that mean?
The Big Scare is the way this has been hyped up so that when you, for example, in the New York City subway, you'll see signs are urging you to get a PSA test and making it seem as though this is a major source of mortality in men. And then it makes it seem as though every cancer that you find is a killer. In fact, only one cancer that is found in men over 50, or put it another way, of 360 men who have a cancer over the age of 50, only one will die of it. Okay?
Huh. That's much lower than I thought.
That's very low. And thyroid cancer, it's similarly very low, and yet you have people searching for thyroid cancer. It's a very slow-growing disease. The doubling time is 435 days. To give you that perspective, a common killer like breast is 70 days. So it's just six times as slow, and it just doesn't get you. For example, I'm going to report on doing a Roto-Rooter job on a benign prostate of a man 101 years old here in the Valley. And he had one of his chips had some prostate cancer in it. Okay, he's 101. He still hasn't had time to die of it. And yet they're all, if you can diagnose them with a needle, they have spread. All cancers that can spread do so at about 2 millimeters in diameter. So this 101-year-old, yeah, he's got a few cells in his bone marrow. He hasn't had time to die of it.
Don't we all have cancer cells in our system? And when they do these tests for cancer, the difference between you have it or you don't really has to do with the amount of cancer cells that they detect. Is that true?
Well, that's a very good comment. You have quantitatively, we as we age, we're getting more and more. 10% of 40-year-olds have prostate cancer. 90% of 90-year-olds have prostate cancer.
90%.
Yeah. I mean, it's just almost all of them. And maybe
why does it
100%.
Hit us? Why does it hit us, doctor, when we get older? Then why does that percent increase?
More errors. I guess neutrinos from outer space. The DNA is multiplying, and then it just makes an error, and it gets out of control. Huh. And it begins to multiply. So it's just more time for error to creep in. There is a mysterious quality to the prostate and the breast, and you know, they really do seem to be more prone to error. The seminal vesicles, which are right next to the prostate and make about two-thirds of the semen, the prostate makes about a third of it. You never hear of cancer of the seminal vesicles. I mean, it's just almost unheard of. So there's a little mysterious quality to the prostate.
When we take phone calls, I wonder if we get any calls from some people who may have prostate cancer. What do they do if you have prostate cancer? Is it instantaneous removal?
Well, I advocate for your listeners, avoid radical surgery, avoid radiation of any kind. I advocate limited nerve-sparing cryo to the prostate. Get rid of the primary with a freeze. You can kill it with a freeze like a wart. There's no point in trying to get outside the prostate and damage the nerves to your sphincter so you drip and so you can't have erections and have a sex life. Just a limited freeze of the primary site. And I calculate in the book, The Big Scare, that you get about a year and a half of extra life by simply destroying those cells, which do in fact shower out and do serve as a focus. So it's a good thing to get rid of the primary site. But I certainly wouldn't, I don't want your listeners to allow radical surgery. I don't want your listeners to have radiation seeds or external beam or proton beam. They convert prostate cancers that would not have killed you into anaplastic cancers that will kill you, that have a 6-year natural history instead of a 22-year natural history.
Interesting.
Triples the incidence of bladder cancer, doubles the incidence of rectal cancer. No radiation. Radiation causes cancer.
Now, radiologists would scream at you right now, wouldn't they?
You know, they wouldn't say I'm wrong. They just don't mention this fact. The prostate cancer is a famous insensitivity to radiation. This was discovered with cobalt in the 30s. And over, they said, oh, my goodness, we failed with this source, and now we're going to use another thing, and now we're going to use proton beam, and we're going to build machines as big as football fields, and they cost millions of dollars, and we're going to aim them at the prostate. But you never hear them say that prostate cancer is radiosensitive. They never say that. And if I said to a radiotherapist, it's insensitive, they'd say you're right. There's no way they could say I was wrong.
If you get prostate cancer, eventually will you be history because of it?
If you live long enough. Now, take my 101-year-old man. Now, if he lived to 120, maybe it would get him. But no, not everybody who gets prostate cancer dies. Now, let's compare that to another cancer, pancreatic cancer. The ratio of people who come to autopsy and have it to the people who die is 1.2 to 1.
Wow.
Namely, almost everybody who has pancreatic cancer dies.
Well, look what happened to Patrick Swayze, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's 6 months, you know. It takes you away. Everybody who has it dies of it. Whereas we said in the beginning of the program, only one out of 360 people who has prostate cancer dies of it. Completely different kettle of fish here.
We have heard about the very sad stories of children coming down with cancer. Here in St. Louis Children's Hospital, they've got a lot of kids there with cancer. It's a very sad, tragic thing.
Yeah.
But
generally,
do young people get cancer at a different rate than older people? It seems that cancers get you, as you were saying, the older you get.
Yes. Well, there's a very particular property of children's cancer, which I actually go into in the book, The Big Scare. I have one of the first chapters is called Other Cancers. And there's a famous children's cancer called neuroblastoma. And the pediatricians thought they had found a way to screen for neuroblastoma. And that would come out in the urine, and they would find it early and take it out early. Well, the deal with children's cancer is some of them have a life span of their own and simply disappear on their own. And that's true of neuroblastoma. So what they found out when they were screening for this children's cancer was that the cancers that disappeared on their own made the trace substance, the screening chemical, whereas the killers didn't make it. So they found people who were going to cure themselves, and they didn't find the people who die of neuroblastoma. And it's very like prostate cancer. The killer is about 10% of prostate cancers are anaplastic, and their killer is about 20% of deaths, and they don't even make this PSA. So you see, your insight into children's cancer is a real one, that screening for cancer has been looked at in this case of neuroblastoma, and they have stopped all screening because it does not do the kids any good.
Do they want to solve and cure cancer?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And there's just a great deal of work and fervor in it. But what is coming around is it's not so much the idea of cure as control, moderate the growth of, so that it's really, really slow. And that people can go on and have reasonably normal, lengthy lives. You might have seen the news report just the other day about some combination of chemo plus one of the anti-neogenetic factors shrunk colon cancer in the liver, and sometimes it went away completely. This kind of control of the slower cancers is what people are talking about. And, oh, they sure want to do it. Yeah, oh, it's there's no big plot here to let cancer flourish so people can make a living. No, I don't see any plot here. I see a plot to make money, but not a plot to have cancer flourish.
Sometimes, though, with a plot to make money, they will do a lot of different things, Anthony.
Well, you don't actually have to plot with this one. It comes right along as you age. So you don't have. Now, if you lead a healthy life, there's so many things that discourage us from leading a healthy life. I was just reading the book, The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yeah.
Do you know that book?
Yeah.
And he describes how unhealthily our food is grown, and how the regulations are slanted towards big farms and big cattle raising operations, and we don't get healthy food. But it's, again, it's a plot to make money, not to injure us.
How did you key in on the big scare? How did you key in on prostate cancer?
Well, as you very kindly pointed out, I spent 15 years of my life under socialism, namely the Veterans Administration.
Yeah.
Okay.
9 years Navy for me, but thank God I haven't had to go into a VA hospital yet.
Yeah, I was 2 years in the Air Force, which is socialism, and then 15 years in the Veterans Administration. And I happened to come in just as World War II was coming through. They are getting to be 68, 70, 72. And I just had this amazing experience, not only of prostate cancer, but of BPH. And I conceived of a passion that this prostate cancer epidemic was wrong. I could see that it was wrong, and that the PSA was wrong. Even back in 86, 87, I was doing something called PSA density, which is dividing the prostate, the PSA by the volume of the prostate, by the BPH, really, the benign hypertrophy, the overgrowth of the prostate, and getting it down to a figure that didn't suggest cancer. And so I was deflating the PSA back there in 86, 87. And I saw around me in the rest of the country this tremendous commercial bubble of interest in prostate cancer. But I was working in socialism where the disease represented a cost rather than a profit.
We're going to take phone calls with you next, Anthony. Hopefully, even if we help one person, it makes this entire night worth it. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Anthony Horan, the big scare in your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll talk about Simply Raw, reversing diabetes in 30 days. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Anthony Horan, author of The Big Scare on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Horan, if somebody has already undergone radiation treatment for cancers, and whether it was prostate or breast or whatever, mm-hmm. is there anything that they can do now after the fact? Can you take anything, any supplements?
Okay. That is a great question. I've not really thought much about it because I've always thought I wanted to discourage it, but it's very true that many of our questioners and the people that I talk to and some of my classmates in college and in high school, they've already had treatment, and now they got problems. I don't really have a treatment for radiation cystitis. It's a miserable thing. There are various suggestions. One of the things that happens is bleeding, and it can be a real trial about 10th year, 11th year later. There's a tremendous urgency. What I'm doing for this urgency from other conditions is put Botox in the bladder, and that'll stop the spasm. That's really a great advance.
Really?
Yeah.
Botox being used for everything now, isn't it?
Yeah. It's symptoms of spasm and frequency and getting up all night. You put Botox in the bladder, and you can really stop it. So, yeah, thinking on my feet, that's what I do for somebody with a real miserable bladder. But I'm just trying to get ahead and prevent people from getting radiation of any kind.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going west of the Rockies. We're going way out to Hilo, Hawaii. Lester, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Lester.
Hi. I sure disagree with your guest.
All right, go ahead. Tell me why, and then let's get his reaction.
Yeah. My PSA was running 2 and 3 for years, and then in 6 months it went up to 14. I had a biopsy, I had cancer, I had radiation, I've been clean for 18 months, my PSA is under 1. I have a friend who would never take a PSA test, and he's dead. So that's all I got to say about that.
Well, the question in the scientific sense is, how would you have done without treatment? And all of our series and our controlled, randomized series show no difference between the treated and the controls. The famous Swedish series, which looked like it was going to show improvement with a radical surgery and complete removal of the prostate at 10 years, at 14 years, it failed to show any difference between the operated and the controls. Now, I understand that people who have committed to a therapy, they want to believe that they did the right thing, and they don't want to think of themselves as having made an error. And that's a very reasonable and human response. And we have a spot in our brain called the left brain interpreter, whose job it is to rationalize and make sense of the world. And this is very common for people to say, I made the right decision, and here, look what happened to my friend. But in science, we look for the control series. And the whole effort of the book, The Big Scare, is to bring science back into this topic. And science was forgotten and neglected as people went running after radical surgery and radiation. And I'm not surprised at your response, but that's my response.
If you don't take the PSA test, if you don't get it, and let's say you do have cancer, how will you know that?
Well, you won't know it very soon, and it's a pretty good thing that you don't know it. I mean, it's kind of a haunting thought, and if it's very unlikely to kill you, why would you want to know that you have a spot that's not going to kill you? There's no utility to knowing that you have this spot of cancer. Now, I do believe, and I put it in the book, that a finger wave, say, every 2 years after 50, that makes sense to me. But and the doc, if the doc feels a hard spot, then send it to your urologist. And urologist says, I think that's a that
do
deserves
a pathology.
Biopsy.
Yeah,
I a finger wave every 2 years, reasonable. Mm-hmm.
Is it a wives' tale? Is it an old myth when they say if they cut you open and if you have cancer, it seems to spread faster?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I'm very interested in that. There was a series in Japan in which they compared men who had a radical prostatectomy and androgen deprivation. We haven't talked about that. Lowering the male hormone with a medicine that we have, and actually I describe in detail in the book. I was in on the in the lab that first discovered this medicine, so I'm very passionate about it. But it was androgen deprivation plus radical surgery versus androgen deprivation alone. The two people died at the two groups died at the same time. But the androgen alone were 8.5 years older. So they were deeper into the natural history. They should have died quicker, but they didn't. It looks like the radical surgery group backed up and died with these older men. And to me, the massive inflammation of the surgery tells the cancer cells that ordinarily many of them commit suicide. And in a site of inflammation, there are messages flying around saying, don't commit suicide. Help heal this hole. And so they don't commit suicide, and they grow more quickly. It's not the oxygen. It's the inflammatory response to the surgery. And inflammation is, and the inflammatory response is coming up very strong in our literature right now. And so this old perception has much more than a grain of truth. I think it's true that surgery, but it stops cell death. Big discovery in cancer in the last 30 years is that most of them commit suicide, and it's the suicide rate as much as the mitosis multiplying rate that determines how quickly this cancer gains ground on you.
Radio host Don Imus, who is on the same station I'm on in New York, WABC,
sure,
has stage 2 prostate cancer. You should get on his show. I think that would be a great interview between you.
T2. Yeah, you know, I'd like to, you know, freeze his cancer. T2 means you can feel it. Okay, freeze it, you know, but don't get the nerves. He want to have his erections. He doesn't want to drip in his pants. And that'll get him a year and a half, and he'll keep his sex life. And presumably, and I don't have evidence for this, it'll stop the complications. When it finally gets him, T2, the mean time to death, if you die of it, is 12 years. Okay? So Don has 12 years.
If you die.
Yeah. If he dies of it, he's got 12 years. He might die of something else.
Let's go to first-time caller Ken in Pennsylvania. You're up with us. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, Ken.
Oh, very well.
Hi. My question is, if we find ourselves having to be forced to take the vaccination, the swine flu vaccination, what can we do? Are there any supplements or things that we can do to cleanse our body after the fact to get it out? There are two things that pop up in my mind, and those are zeolites or DSMO. I don't really know much about either one of them, but yeah. I know that they do cleanse the body of those kind of things. But
well, you know, this is about prostate cancer, but I actually happen to know quite a bit about swine flu because my wife just had it. I guess you're referring to the immunization creates flu-like symptoms. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I do? I told her I use a combination of aspirin and antihistamine to quiet swelling. This sounds like nothing, but I came across a paper by two Britishers written in 1949, and it showed a tremendous synergy that is working together of aspirin and antihistamine against the inflammatory edema, the swelling that accompanies inflammation. And if you take just aspirin and 50 milligrams of Benadryl or diphenhydramine together, that'll blunt your symptoms. And if you take it before the swine flu, it'll blunt them even more. So I actually know a little about it. I'm a urologist.
Thank you, Ken. Next up, we go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hank, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Thanks, Hank. Go ahead.
Let's talk about proteolytic enzymes. Do you ever use those to go in and strip the coating off cancer cells?
I'm not against it. I haven't done it. I'm a cryo man. I freeze cancer. Mm-hmm. Cancer cells are particularly susceptible to cold. They don't develop a blood supply very well, so that when you circulate liquid helium in there or argon, you freeze them selectively, and the normal tissues are spared. And so I'm very, and you do a freeze-thaw cycle. You know, when you take a mountaineer off the mountain and he's got frozen feet, you leave the feet in the boot and leave them frozen until you get down. Because if you freeze-thaw, you lose that foot. Well, that's what we do in cancer.
You haven't answered my question. Have you ever heard of there's a gal that worked for the FDA, toxicology department. When she retired, she wrote My Little Cyanide Cookbook.
Yeah.
And the reason she wrote that is she found out that the vitamin B17, if you want to call it that, that is in all the seeds of all fruits, apple seeds, every pit that's cherry pit seeds, inside those seeds is this B17, which is like a cyanide-type material.
Yeah.
Now, if you can use proteolytic enzymes to strip the coating off foreign material, which is what cancer cells are coated in. And take these seed supplements,
cyanide gets into the cancer.
Well, yeah, and you've also heard of Dr. C. Maccone, an Italian that uses a baking soda to.
No, I haven't gotten much into that literature. I'm a surgeon, and I don't read everything.
Well, and B17 is what we also used to have the Laetril treatments, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, so they banned that.
They banned that, exactly.
Well, yes. But there's a
doctor. That's because they couldn't make money doing it. That's why.
Yes. Yeah. Have you heard of Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez?
No. I'm all for conservative treatment of cancer, though. Lesser treatments don't weaken the body. Do the minimum that it takes to at least remove the primary, strengthen the body somehow. And actually, in prostate cancer, there is some immune response to prostate cancer, and there's a drug coming along called Dendrion that's close to FDA approval, in which they take the white cells of the patient, teach them that PSA is the enemy, put them back in the patient, they go scavenge these cells, and people live longer. Also, when I was a resident at Columbia, we would freeze a cancer and then come back and freeze it again 2 weeks later. And about, a third of the men who had metastases to their bones, their bone pain went away.
Huh.
So we felt we were immunizing them against their cancer.
Even if you don't freeze all the cancer cells, Dr. Horan, does that still help the patient? You've killed most of them?
It calls attention to the cells. The freezing doesn't change the chemical groups on the surface. The white cells come in and say, aha, we got an enemy here. And they teach themselves to start chewing up this enemy. And then they go after the live cells elsewhere. Exactly. No, you don't have to kill every last cell. You just have to teach the body that we've got a problem here.
Let's go to Long Beach, California. Hello, Julie. Go ahead. You're up with us.
Hi, guys. I wanted to ask, I know you're talking mostly about prostates and men and everything, that, and, which is nice because I don't hear that very often. I always hear about women and cancer. But I do have a friend, a woman, who's going in for a lumpectomy on Thursday.
Yeah.
And she's recommended to have radiation for 6 weeks after that. And she's a little, you know, people
say, oh, boy, that's a great question, Julian. I'm so glad. When I was at Columbia, this whole battle over lumpectomy was taking place. And there was a man named Hugh Auchincloss Jr. who was fighting the radical mastectomy, where they're taking the muscles and all the lymph nodes and leaving women in pain and misery and not helping the cancer. So that was proven, the lumpectomy was proven to be as good as this drastic 19th century operation in 1997. Bernard Fisher at the University of Pittsburgh proved the little operation was as good as the big. Now, the radiation deal, I've never seen any evidence that it did anything. And I have seen over the years evidence that it causes lymphosarcoma in the irradiated lymph nodes. And there was a famous woman writer, George, you might remember her name. She was a New York-based writer, and she had radiation to her chest for breast, and then she got a lymphosarcoma. And all the press missed the fact that this might have been induced by the radiation. I want science. I want to see some radiation oncologists prove that people who get radiated in their lymph nodes live longer. Because if it's in their lymph nodes, it's everywhere. And I think they should have systemic therapy if they have Herceptin positive or something. They should have their hormones lowered. Go after it systemically. But this local treatment, I've never seen evidence that it lengthens life.
Was that
I shouldn't comment on breast because my book's about prostate cancer, but I do have a chapter called Other Cancers in the book, so I actually went through a lot of this dispute. And there's a very good book called The Breast Cancer Wars, written by a Columbia man, and he describes all this fussing around. But radiation has never had science behind it.
Where do you get your book, The Big Scare?
That is at sterlinghouse-bookstore.com, and that goes right to the publisher. She's a small house in Pittsburgh. The book is being printed about this week, so there'll be a little delay, but you can get it. And then barnesandnoble.com is going to be carrying it, and then you can go to my website, alpineurology.com, and you can read my CV and see what my credentials are. And then there's a link to the Sterling House bookstore.com, so you'll get right directed there. And then you can use PayPal and you can buy it. It's going to be about $19, and I think it's real interesting.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony. Dr. Anthony Horan, author of The Big Scare, his perspective on prostate cancer. We'll be up next. We're going to talk about raw foods in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.